Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Daily Canon Weekly Podcast, episode number 275. We're rattling through these at a great pace now. Stephen Bradley here, sitting in for Matthew Wade this week. As if you saw in the news a couple of days ago, Mike Dean has announced that he's not going to be available for selection for this week's round of Premier League fixtures. He's taking the week off. And Matthew Wade, in solidarity of his favourite person in the whole wide world, has also decided to take off a couple of days to ease the heartbreak and make himself emotionally ready for another week's work. If you will have listened to last week's podcast, you'll know exactly how he feels about Mike Dean and how strong his love and affection for everything that man does holds in his heart. So we wish him well. We hope he gets over his trauma and his heartbreak, and we hope he'll be back in the near future. Joining me in his absence, as we try to go on with the week's normal news, is Anita Sambal.
Hello.
And verging on becoming friend of the show now at this point, she's come on two or three in the last couple of months, is our own friend Lana Dawood. Lana, how are you, ma'am?
Thank you. How are you?
I'm sober, which is a good thing considering the last work I recorded for Daily Canon, I was half jarred after 2.5 bottles of Old Speckled Hen. If you do want to see my work on the website, listener, I'm now doing tactical roundups of all Arsenal games the day or the night that they're watched. They're on our YouTube page or they're on the website. So please, if you need someone to shout at and you need someone to vent at after we lose, click on and, you know, look at this ugly mug talking you through all the tactical tweaks and nuances that are made during a game. And there were plenty this weekend as Arsenal stumbled to another unglorified defeat, let's put it frankly. Another 1-0 loss to Aston Villa Saturday lunchtime. I said in my tactical video that Arteta, the seat is starting to get warmed up underneath him, the pressure is starting to build, and whilst I'm not hopping on the Arteta out bandwagon yet, I can hear it revving up behind me and I am looking for seats. Am I wrong, Anita?
Well, it was a really nice month and a half, perhaps, after the Boxing Day and everything, when his seat was kind of shaking in November, December, when things were looking really grim. And right now, yeah, I mean, we talked about on Slack how we will try to oppose you, your Arteta out stance, which you shared during your videos. But, I mean, I didn't get the impression that you are 100% Arteta out, but that you have some kind of points that could lead to that. And I have to say, after watching your videos and remembering the match against Aston Villa once again and all the fantastic substitutions our dear manager has made so far, yeah, I think that your points make sense. And I wouldn't say that you are too crazy to go Arteta out, maybe not, you know, completely, but that, yeah, definitely his seat is kind of getting a bit warm and shaking.
Lana, we always go to you for like our European perspective, where it's like, how do Arsenal look from the outside? And what is the impression of Arteta outside of me? Like, is he being considered as doing a good job at Arsenal, or is it a job in progress, or is it how much time are they going to give him?
I think it's a mix of, well, he is, you know, someone like Solskjaer, Lampard, you know, who are getting the chance to lead their clubs. But also, I think he easily has the most difficult job of the three, given the, you know, the money restrictions, giving the impossible task of getting, you know, we have to commend him for having gotten off so many players off the wage bill, you know, the biggest one being Mesut Ozil, Mustafi. So these are like huge, basically new signings in a form of, you know, you're having this huge money off the wage list. Now, you know, you only need to get rid of Willian. But I think that he is unlucky in many ways because it's such a huge mess to clean up. You know, it's down to a lot of things. People love to blame Wenger, of course, as always. And I'm, you know, ready gun blazing, trying to, you know, shoot down whoever dares speak ill of him. But as much as, you know, fine, he has some faults, but also I think the issue lies within the board. Decisions have been made, and now he has this impossible task of trying to get some structure in and stability, which is very, very difficult for a club like Arsenal because they've had so much turmoil. So I wouldn't be saying that he's done a bad job, but I can understand why people are out for blood, given that some of the decisions he's made during the games, you know, Anita picked up on it, substitutions, for instance. I have a bone to pick with him after, you know, the Villa game, because I was like, what are you doing? Excuse me? We need to have a talk, bro. You know,
I think everyone shared your opinion over the substitutions. Maybe one or two made some sense and made improvements in the second half, especially when Odegaard was subbed on. Maybe Aubameyang didn't make that big of a difference.
I didn't know Aubameyang came on.
Yeah, I think that he had like one header or something like that, but nothing else. I mean, definitely a whole other topic, what is happening with Aubameyang. But I think that the second substitution was well, but then it was completely destroyed with the third substitution.
Because I would have loved to have Martin Ødegaard come on with Lacazette still being on. Because the thing is, we've picked up on this before, that when you lack that creativity, he's forced to drop deep, then you don't have someone in the box up front to, you know, be able to pick up that ball and score out of it, or, you know, lay it on the silver plate for someone out on the wings. And I was like, are you for real? Really, dude? What? Because Ødegaard was amazing, you know, coming on. You could really see that he made a difference in that team and they had more chances, but Martinez suddenly decided to turn into a prime Gigi Buffon, which most goalkeepers do.
It wasn't really suddenly, Lana. We have seen him develop in something like that over the last season. And I wasn't really shocked that he made that fantastic save for Xhaka and everything else that he has been doing at Villa. So that wasn't really a shock to me. But yeah, definitely, Ødegaard made quite an impression on his first appearance as a substitution, and such a shame that Arteta went with Willian. I mean, again, to touch upon something that you kind of mentioned, Lana, during your judgment on Arteta, that he has been a bit unlucky. I think that he has been unlucky in many matches as well, not only with the signings and the dealings with the board and everything like that, but also in the matches, including this one. He had a plan, as in many before, that something, you know, what he will do against Aston Villa, how they are playing and all that. And then we go and, you know, moment of players being turned off, both Cedric and Holding in defense as well. And we are down 1-0 after just a few minutes, and everything that he has planned has gone to waste. And then with this Willian substitution, he was obviously plan, it looked like that he was planning to sub Smith Rowe off and put Willian on, and then Partey was injured, and then he didn't just change the plan, he went with Willian instead of, I don't know, Ceballos.
I call him Voldemort, so, because he doesn't deserve to be called by his full name, he who shall not be named, because I feel whenever someone mentions him, it just like the whole timeline gets so hostile. I'm like, if I was him, I wouldn't want to be seen out in public, because I genuinely feel that people want his head on a silver platter. I think my issue with Arteta, which I brought up before, is I don't feel he has a plan B and C. I feel that he is, which I've said, he reminds me a lot of Conte. Conte has now improved as well, but Conte never had a plan B. Never had a plan C. He stuck to his plan A, and no matter how badly it went, he's like, nope. He's like one of those people who are like, okay, if I try hard enough multiple times, it will succeed in the end. The thing is, you can't have that mentality in such a tough league where every point counts, especially if you're, you know, trying to get top four, which I don't think it's very likely, but you know, that's my issue. It's like, okay, fine, Partey was injured, but surely you can bring on literally whoever you want, and you bring on him. Yeah. And it's like he needs to have a plan B and C. And that's the issue with managers who haven't had such a huge role. We see that with Pirlo as well, that he doesn't have a plan B. He's starting now to evolve. Now his plan B has been bringing on Morata whenever Juve is struggling, because he's the one that works well with Ronaldo. But you need to be able to, as Anita mentioned, fine, he has a plan coming into the game, but how likely is it that that plan is going to work? You need to have backup plans, because we saw that, what, it was like 70 seconds and suddenly Arsenal conceded. And I was like, of course, Bertrand Traoré is at the end of that one. All right, he couldn't do anything for Lyon, but he's doing well for Villa. So I was like, oh, face palm groaning, just like, no, no, no. And I was like, yeah. It's going to be a long game.
Yeah, it's the difference between an architect and an engineer. An architect can draw up these wonderful plans and wonderful sketches and kind of figure out how things work. And a lot of them will have a degree in building and they'll be able to know, right, that'll go there, that'll go there. Everything works well. Everything will fit in. Nice plan. It'll look great. And then you hand those plans to an engineer and to a builder. And he goes, lads, the concrete went off 3 hours ago. What are we going to do? And the architect goes, well, this is how it's supposed to be built. And everyone's like, no, we don't have the resources you need. You need to come up with another plan. And the architect goes, no, but I put so much effort into this plan. This plan's all we've got. Arteta seems like he can come up with a very, very, very good plan A, whether it be five at the back that won them the FA Cup in August, or this hybrid 4-2-3-1, 4-1-2-3, whichever way they play at times. And it works sometimes. But when things hit the fan, like they did against Wolves and like they did against Villa, he's a quote-unquote a rookie manager, but he's there a year and a quarter now. And to Lana's point, Pirlo is there 3 or 4 months, but is already getting a sense of, actually, the players I'm using might not be the best fit. I'm going to need to bring on another player like Morata that fits in better roles. Arteta has yet to do that at Arsenal, even a year and a quarter in. Bringing off Lacazette for Aubameyang, a like-for-like substitution, when you're asking your centre-forward to come deep to get the ball, is the last thing you want Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to be doing. You want him to be running through and past the backline. It's his elite skill. His timing of runs and his ability to finish off chances. That's it. He does nothing else. And yet he's really good at those two things, so you play him either left wing or as a striker who does nothing but run behind the backline. He did neither. Brings on Odegaard, plays Saka left back. This podcast knows and the world knows I don't like Saka at left back because I like my best attacking player to be 20 yards towards their goal as opposed to 20 yards from our goal. But if you're 1-0 down, you're desperate for a goal, it's a grand, you know, throw everything at them situation where it's a grand last-ditch effort where you play him at left back and then you let him bomb on and you don't worry about what's behind him. You play jacket left back when you have the ball and just cover the space. And like I said, I don't like that plan, but it was working. It was working really well. For 15 minutes while that 11 was on the pitch, Saka and Pepe, who had another good game at left wing, he's starting to establish himself as a decent left winger, were having all sorts of fun against Matty Cash and Kunza at their right side of centre back. And you were like, okay, leave them. There's not a guarantee that Arsenal will score, but this is their best chance. Leave them there, 2-on-2. Odegaard is doing a really good job of doing what Smith-Rowe was doing 2 weeks ago, which was popping up in the spaces where you want someone to be. And then Smith-Rowe was looking at Odegaard, right, you're going there, I'll go right wing, I'll get out of the way. And it was working. And then with 15 minutes to go, Partey goes down. It looks like his injury isn't serious, thank God. But he goes down, and Arteta has three options. Elneny, which would have been a little bit defensive, but then you could push Xhaka forward and then you hope that they pull something out of the back. Ceballos, which would have been the best like-for-like sub for Partey. Again, he's not as good, but you could have played exactly the same way and you would have been fine. Or you bring on Martinelli, who would have been right. Okay, he's another left winger, but okay, we're just going to overload the left wing completely or play Martinelli through the middle and let Aubameyang just go wherever he wants. Say, look, you stand on Tyrone Mings' shoulder, you stay there, be grand. Nope. He brings on Willian. And as option four, none of the above. And as a result, we're left with a position where Arsenal take away every threat they had, because Aston Villa now looked at Pepe cutting in from the right, Willian cutting in from the left, and they went, grand, they're not going to try and beat us on the wings anymore. They're going to run straight for us. So we're going to put four backs on the penalty area, let them stand 18 yards out. McGinn and Nakamba are going to sit 5 yards in front of them and chase them. And if they run through us, fair play, but we bet they won't. And they were right. And it was like watching the Tottenham game all over again, where we had 44 crosses. In the Villa game,
it was so predictable. That's the issue. Teams are getting to, are seeing just how predictable Arsenal is. And that is really scary. Like, if I'm Arteta, I'm like, okay, I need to get my shit together. I really need to figure this out, because I cannot be a laughingstock where I'm being so predictable that teams such as Wolves and Villa know how to set up against us. That is a major concern. Do you know that what that means? That means that Arsenal is now a mid-table team that are easily predictable, that are easily, counterattacked. And that should be a huge concern for a team that spent the last 20 years in the Champions League and now can't even make it to the Europa League. And, you know, we gave Wenger a lot of shit for always finishing in the top four. But we now see the result of not finishing in the top four and not being in the biggest competition in the world, which would have given you more money as well, more attraction to, having, the power to sign better players.
And Wenger's biggest trump card when it came to tactics was a simple approach, but it was a very effective approach with the right players. Whereas how can the opposition set up for a style of football when we rock up and we don't know what we're going to be doing ourselves? Because he literally would put four or five playmakers in the middle of the park, hand the ball and says, right, you figure it out. And you couldn't prepare for it because they could run at you from any angle. And it led to tactical chaos, which is just what he liked. He liked having 6, 7, 8 attackers in and around the box and asking the defence, go on, mark all of them, I dare you. And eventually one would make a mistake. You'd have a clever enough player like a Bergkamp, like a Van Persie, like a Fabregas, like an Arshavin, like a Nasri, someone like an Ozil, someone who of that ilk who would go, oh, there's a space there, little dink ball, we score. With this, we have a system that can work some of the time, but it's not good enough to break down the better teams, especially the better defensive teams. And the manager in place right now hasn't come up with a plan B to solve that. And we got Unai Emery sacked for that a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that gets me actually worried, as I was worried with Wenger going away and Emery sucking and everything. Who is out there that would come and would fix the problems right now and not for another year and a half?
There is no one, because you have issues that cannot be fixed in the space of 6 months. This is a work in progress that, unfortunately and sadly enough, is going to take years to fix.
Yeah, that's why I'm inclining to sticking with Arteta, because he's a young one. He's also learning, just as some of the people on board are learning as well. And as you said, the club is in progress of something new. The whole thing, whole structure changed after Wenger left, and everyone keeps finding themselves. So I think that
I wouldn't sack him. I think he has a good thing going. But the thing with Arsenal fans is that many of them lack patience. And it's, you don't have to go far. Look at clubs like Inter, at AC Milan. These are big giants who for years couldn't even get into Europe, let alone the Champions League. And look at them now. Yeah, it's been how many years? Like 6, 7 years of bantering from Juve fans and even Napoli fans. But look at them now. They've had overcome a lot, but they're in better places with, managers who know how to set up teams, with players that are capable of taking them, to the Champions League, to fighting for the title, to, League Cup finals. And I think that Arsenal fans has to be mentally prepared for that. This is a learning curve with the club, with the manager, with the player. It's going to take time to find the right formula. It might take, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Hell, it might even take 7 years. But I think in the long haul, it will be worth it because you have that stability. Yeah.
I think that the issue here to be a little bit in defense for some Arsenal fans who are complaining about Arteta and all that, that it seems like we do one or two things in a good way, as you said, with getting some players off the wage bill and all that, and some really good signings that happened over the last year or so, last season. But then again, we see things like these substitutions, no plan B, perhaps overplaying some players or making them play before they have been recovered properly. You know, things like that that still keep us worried and thinking, is it the right direction? Is he a right man for this job? And it's really all confusing. I mean, we have obviously been spoiled for 20 or more years with Wenger. We didn't even realize how spoiled we were, but definitely a learning curve and a process. Big trust the process, as they say.
So yes, I would agree. I do think Arteta needs time. I can pick apart things I like about his reign so far and things I don't like about his reign so far, but I do agree he does need time, at least to just try and show that he is learning on the job and he can fix this. My issue, though, is that I don't know if he's going to get it, because here is Arsenal's next fixtures. And you both tell me where his next win's going to be, right? Leeds on Sunday. Leeds, who are in decent form, but Leeds could do anything. They could turn up to the Emirates and win 5-0. They could lose 5-0, right? Benfica away. Well, away. It's in Rome. City at home. Benfica's second leg, which could literally be anywhere. It was supposed to be in Athens, and then Athens went, we're not letting Brits in here, you're mad. So they locked down Athens until the 28th of February. Legitimately, if you've got a big enough backyard, listener, you might have they might come to you and say, can we play in your garden at this stage? Then it's Leicester away, Burnley away, Tottenham at home, West Ham away, Liverpool at home, and then Sheffield United away. Which might be the first game where you look at Arsenal, okay, Arsenal are favourites to win that. Sheffield United, and that's if Arsenal beats Benfica in the two legs, they'll have another two legs. You know, if they get through that, they'll have another Europa League tie in between those two. So the first game Arsenal are legitimate favourites for is 2 months away.
I need a beer now, Steve.
No, but that's half the reason why I say there's going to be a bandwagon building, because God forbid, if they don't beat Leeds, they don't beat Benfica, they don't beat City, they don't beat Leicester, they don't beat Burnley, they don't beat Tottenham, they don't beat just West Ham, they don't beat...
Just piles up.
And it's going to become untenable.
Take it positively. You literally have zero pressure on you because no one thinks you're favorites. And judging from past performances, Arsenal usually turn up when there's zero pressure on them. So you might be positively surprised. Look at me being on positive. I'm like the most negative person on earth. But you know, you can suddenly lose to Leeds and then win away against City. You never know. I mean, it's a crazy thing. This is coming from someone who watched Lyon dominate Metz for 87 minutes straight, only to have Metz score in the final minute and Lyon lost their game after having gone 18 games unbeaten. So, you know, if I think that you can do it, I think you should have hope. You can always blame me afterwards. It's fine. You can't kill me because you're not allowed into the country, so I'm safe that way.
I'm used to being Mr. Pessimism here on this podcast as it is. But even when I'm beside you, I feel like the glass is overflowing. Never mind half full or half empty. But like I said, I would like to be wrong. I'd like to be wrong. I want Arsenal to win. But like, I look at the current run of games. You're like, yes, they could scratch a win or two out of them here. But Benfica are good. They're not great. They're good. Like they're fourth in Premier League. They're not, you know, Sporting Lisbon or Porto this year. But they're probably a better team than Arsenal right now. And I don't fancy them over two legs. Especially now, knowing Arsenal, of course, we'll play the second leg in the back arse of nowhere and lose on away goals in extra time because both legs were away from home. You know, like it'll be something.
I don't understand that. Why it's not just like last year they did. Oh, which round was it? Lyon Juve played both legs. Then there was only one-legged games for the end of the Champions League.
The bubble in Portugal, right?
Yeah. So why aren't we scraping the two-legged games? Given how much more worse it is. Being able to enter countries now. I mean, Liverpool isn't allowed into Germany. No. And by FIFA rules or laws, Liverpool will be automatically given a 3-0 win if that game isn't played.
Yeah, they're playing that game in Budapest against Leipzig. Like I said, United have to play in Turin, Arsenal are in Rome. There's a few games actually being played in Budapest.
That Chelsea is in Bucharest, isn't it?
Eastern Europe is going to be flooded by the Brits again. Like it's
yeah, because they're the only countries like, oh, we'll let you in after a loan war. You can come in.
It's 1944 all over again. Like it's, but it's. At some point, you do have to look at it and go, do these games need to be two legs? Like, and then you see the FA Cup being played at the moment, and those games are going to extra time. And you're like, why? Like, why? Like, there's a pandemic going on. Like, these players are wrecked as it is. Kieran Tierney can barely, get back onto the pitch. He's been ran into the ground. Same's happened to Mikel Antonio. Same's happened to Paul Pogba. Like, these players are being thrashed into the ground to get these games done, and nothing is being done to alleviate that pressure. Like, yes, they're being paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds, but they're humans too. There's only so much abuse a human body can take. And we're rapidly coming up to the limit of, three games. If you're playing for City, it's three games a week now until the middle of June. And then Euro 2021 rocks up and goes, hi, here's another three games a week.
And then you have the... Is the Olympics called off?
No, not yet. But
not yet.
They'd be played in August.
Yeah, and that's like French players who are also, the likes of Kylian Mbappe is going to be attending that game, those games. And then you have the World Cup or literally around the corner. The African Cup of Nations is also being played. It's like... it's going to be hell for these players. And I would not be surprised if we saw massive burnouts on many of these players. I think the only players having an advantage this summer are the ones not participating in the Euros because they're allowed to, recuperate and actually take time off.
You heard it here first, listener. Aaron Connolly is going to be worth £60 million in the summer because he's going to be healthy. Every Irish player in the sort, one of the few teams that's not going to be in a tournament or any sort of playoff race at all because even their World Cup group, their first game is Serbia away. Like, it's like they're going to be playing nothing in the summer at all. Like, you're going to find Michael Obafemi is going to be worth $40 million in Southampton. Like, it's, and I'm being flippant, but that's going to happen. Like, we're already hearing talk of summer signings. You're like, who's going to be standing? Like, who got them? You saw the reports in the papers today. Aaron Ramsey back to Arsenal, and you're like,
every Italian media is, which is really weird considering Pirlo loves Ramsey.
Yeah.
It's like he's been saying he's like our Marchisio in many ways, but Arteta apparently really wants him back.
Right, so it's a pandemic. You need players to play three games a week. Do you know who I'm bringing back? Aaron Ramsey.
30-year-old Aaron Ramsey. Funny, I saw that those news coming around, so I ran a poll on my Twitter asking my followers if Ramsey would be available for free, would they have him back in Arsenal? And 72% said yes.
Of course, I think it's that nostalgic feeling of
sentimental, but
the way he left as well.
The replies and comments, those who were mostly saying no, had made really a lot of sense that he's both injury prone, over 30, and his wages are probably way above.
He's on 100. He's on 180, 170 a week after taxes in Italy. Not 400k as I've seen literally every Arsenal fan who doesn't follow. The thing is, Juve is a publicly traded club. So all the numbers are legit and they're all published every summer. You know, you have the clubs like Lyon and Juve, since they're, you know, share owners in them, you have to release that information. So I was like, suck on that, Arsenal fans. He's not on 400k, you know, it's just 170, which he's totally deserved.
Yeah, he's barely scraping a living, the poor man.
Yeah, but he's doing so well though, and he's learning Italian, and you know, he gets to play with Ronaldo. I mean, come on, would you want to leave?
It's a fair point. We also have to point out that half of Anita's mentions this week were filled with people answering her poll about whether Aaron Ramsey should go to the Arsenal. The other half, of course, filling her mentions because Croatia Week decided to interview her.
I saw the interview.
It's FIFA sending her to the World Cup. And now we've got national newspapers and magazines knocking up on our door saying, hey, can we do a 2-page spread, please? So, Anita, how is it to be famous, the most famous celebrity ever to appear on an Arsenal podcast?
Oh, come on.
Can we have your autograph?
Yeah. can you sign it? Can you sign
it now?
Yeah, we're gonna send you a picture, and can you sign it like to dear eBay user? It'd be greatly appreciated.
I don't know. I think that they have been following me for a while. It's good. Croatian news in English, I think, something like that, the site. And I often retweet their tweets because a lot of my followers are speaking English and might find some news interesting to read like that. And yeah, they just ask if I would be happy to answer some questions. They emailed them. They didn't ask to do Zoom call or anything. So that was a major plus. And they also asked my husband to be involved as well. So that was really fun. So, yeah.
Well, for sure.
We've been following you for a while. It sounds so creepy and yet so exciting. Yeah. It's like whenever someone was like, yeah, we've been watching you for a while now. And I'm like, that's not creepy at all. You know, just like locking all doors, turning all the blinders on and be like hiding under the covers. They were like, yeah, we would like you to write a piece on, you know, a certain player. And it's like, yeah, you need to start the conversation less creepy next time, dude. Just, you know, for future references, that would be peachy things.
Well, yeah. The world is still learning how to treat women with respect, unfortunately.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's nice whenever they're like, oh, yeah, so what's your views on this? Then they're like, we'll copy paste what she said, block her, and then post it as our own views.
That's horrible.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm like, yeah, screw you guys. You're not allowed inside my brain. I will share it gladly. But now I've stopped even, you know, talking about French players because either people want them or they're like, no, but they can't do it in the Premier League.
Yeah.
That's what happened with Chelsea's manager this week when she was asked, oh, you must be thrilled to be offered the chance to interview for the AFC Wimbledon's men's job. She's like, why would I take them? I've got World Cup winners here. Like, why do you think that a League One team looking for is a step up from Chelsea? Why would you? Oh, it's because I get the chance to manage men. Ah, yes. And she basically told them to get stuffed and was right. Like, Jesus. Like, it's the way the world's going, where it's like, oh, the men's games, anything that's got men to do is the pinnacle, and oh, you should be going there for your achievements. And it's like, no, like, you know, as soon as women's game is given the equal attention it deserves, then we're all going to be in a better place, because then we'll have two versions of football that we can watch on a regular basis, on regular channels, and be entertained by both equally, and the world's better off as a result.
You should have seen, who was it that posted about Stephanie Frappard? She refereed the Juventus game. I think it was before Christmas. Because the Champions League has been on a break. And it was so amazing for me as a woman to watch her, you know, clear the path for other women. Because she was here, she was in the biggest competition in Europe, refereeing a game. She was the boss on the pitch.
You saw the Super Bowl on the Super Bowl this weekend, where Tom Brady, the word I can't use at this hour, won his seventh Super Bowl. But they had a female referee for the first time. Now, she's been reffing all year. And in American football, they have teams, they're crews of referees. So there's like five of them. So like the head referee who announces all the decisions they've been making to the crowd, and then the four others who basically alternate jobs. Which she's the first person, the first woman to ever be in a referee's crew for a Super Bowl. And all year when she was reffing, she'd have her hair, because they wear caps, she'd have her hair tied up under her cap because she'd got long flowing blonde hair. But she'd have it tied up because she didn't want to make a scene. She's just there to be a referee, end of. Super Bowl, bleep that. It's out the hole of the cap. And it's amazing. And it's like, no, I'm here. It's a Super Bowl. Everyone else is sending a message. So am I. And fair play. Like, use the platform. You've done exceptionally well to get there. You've broken glass ceilings. Earn it. Own it. Get there. You know, show it. Like, don't be afraid of being you. Like, yes, you're going to get trolls and idiots online clicking away, going, oh, my God. The hell with them. Like, you know, like, we've seen this with Mike Dean this week, having to take a week off because of, you know, trolls online, and Ian Wright having to, did you see the Ian Wright story this week? Where a lad in Kerry, an 18-year-old, sent Ian Wright 20 Instagram DMs and messages calling him every name under the sun. Not because Ian Wright had said something on TV or because Ian Wright had scored a goal 15 years ago that you'd seen on YouTube that he hated. He sent Ian Wright all this hate because he was using his icon card on FIFA Ultimate Team. And Ian Wright's card in FIFA Ultimate Team is not very good. And he was losing games because of it, and so he decided to call him every racial slur he could because he was losing games at FIFA.
He got away, didn't he?
Ian Wright wrote a victim impact statement, basically forgiving the young lad, because he's 18, and saying, look, I hope you learn from this. I hope you use this as a teaching moment in your life. I hope that this is a light shining, you know, event where you see the error of your ways, and you go, it was very, you know, very well written, very gracious of him, frankly, to send that, to say, look,
definitely.
And Irish judges, this lad went, ah, well, sure, he's after letting you off, you'll be fine. And your man now doesn't have a criminal conviction. And everyone in the courtroom was like, you mug, you just let him off. And then Ian Wright finds out about his three hours later, and he puts a message on Instagram going, sure, what's the point? And he's right. You know, like, as long as there isn't any recriminations for being an anonymous troll on the internet, everyone will stay doing this because everyone loves venting into the abyss. And I don't know how you stop it, frankly, because if Facebook and Twitter say, right, okay, we're going to put a stop to all this anonymous nonsense. If you want to say something on our platform, you have to give us your ID. Are you giving Facebook or Twitter your ID? Because I'm not. And that's not because I want to be anonymous. That's because I know they can't be trusted with my personal details. So what do you do? Like, do you make sure that you legitimize everything and say, right, you have to have everything, like almost like a permanent record where someone can look up your search history and say, oh, she said this, she said this, she said this, and she said this. Or do you just let people vent as they hold, and you try and, you know, educate society as a whole that this is a bad idea? Because you can, but that's going to take a lot more time than Mikel Arteta is going to need to fix out.
Yeah, but it's like, having been someone who's been at the receiving end of racism ever since I was 5, I get it. What's the point? It's like, you've systematically been through racism for, like, I'm 30 now, so for 25 years. You've been told literally everything under the sun. You've been labeled a terrorist, get back to where you came from. And I was like, yeah, I came from Sweden, I can go back. So you sort of, it's never okay, but you get used to it. You learn to live with it. And in the end, you're just so fed up. You're like, what's the point? I get him. Like, literally, what's the point? We're in 2021 and racism is at its worst than it's ever been. And we don't see, you know, it's easy for FIFA and UEFA to be like, I say no to racism. But unless there's serious consequences to people's actions, we're never going to get anywhere. unfortunate. We not only with racism, we see with women as well. I mean, how many times haven't you been abused, Anita, for an opinion? And how many times haven't you been told to get back to the kitchen and make a fucking sandwich? Like, and people wishing rape, cancer, God knows what else on you, to the point where you're like, all right, you know what? I am going to delete my account, start a new one, and pretend that I'm a man, which I did, where it led to women flirting with me because they thought my opinions on football was so sexy. So, you know, when trying to tell them, you know, I'm a girl, I have boobs and a vagina, so I'm not a guy, but pretending to be a guy is really funny because no one is wishing rape on me or telling me to get back to the kitchen. So, you know, it's like, it, unfortunately, it is the way it is. And you, no matter how much you try, it's pointless. So now you're like, okay, I was trolling Liverpool fans at the weekend claiming that, you know, Mohamed Salah was a diver. Can you imagine all the abuse I got? That was really funny. I had City fans loving the tweet. Then I had Liverpool fans being like, not to go far, we had the World Cup, Women's World Cup last year. Wendy Renard is probably the greatest defender in women's history. And she, people are like, yeah, she's a poor version of Virgil van Dijk. And I'm like, you fucking prick. He's not even fit to, you know, lace her shoes. Do you know she's literally won everything there's possible to win. And he's won, what, a fucking Premier League title, which they, you know, match fix their way through. I mean, dude, he should be honored to even be mentioned in the same sense. Do you know how much abuse I sent people because of that? I was so furious. I was like, hell fucking no. No one's going to diss my girl. Like, she's amazing. I mean, the things she's done for Lyon, the amount of titles we've won because of her. And I was like, nope, that little piece of shit is not going to do anything. And now it's karma. He's out for the season. So, you know, Liverpool fans, next time you try to come for me, that's what happens.
I assume that abuse that you sent, that, as you said, was just football-related, football banter, not something based on race anything like that. Yeah, that's.
I don't even know how these people look, because all of them have pictures of football players. So,
and you didn't care if someone was a woman or a man.
No. I had one person, she was like, yeah, but she's a woman. And I'm like, so are you. You should be lifting us up, not, you know, pressing us down. But that's the issue. You know, us women are our own worst enemies. Yes, instead of lifting everyone else, we're part of the culture that's led us to this. So that's why referees suck. We can talk about that since Anita, you know, and or Steven brought it up a bit earlier, because as I mentioned before the podcast started, VAR doesn't suck. It's great. It's just that you have really shitty referees.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was doomed to fail in Premier League because of the way referees are. It just, they don't get the fact that they are seeing the same thing over and over again on the screen doesn't help, because they will make a wrong decision.
Yeah, anyway. At some point, like I said, VAR needs to be changed. Just to, they try to idiot-proof it by reducing all laws to yes or no answers, which then doesn't make them laws, it makes them rules. Yeah. And the whole point of having laws in a game instead of rules is that laws can be interpreted, because you need judges, and these referees need to be good judges, and these referees are awful judges. And it's one of those, now that the laws have been rewritten and rewritten badly, and now you've got referees who aren't as good as they were 20 years ago, you're ending up with situations like what happens with Tomáš Souček with West Ham Fulham, where he's sent off for shrugging off Alexander Mitrovic. You know, you've got situations where Begnarak and David Luiz can be sent off for identical fouls, and one of them was rescinded, one of them isn't. And you look at both of them, you're going, what's the difference? You know, and it's just incidents like that where you don't, like I said, we used to be looking for where we need consistency. We want referees to make the same decisions over and over again. But you kind of grow out of that opinion because you realize, hang on a minute, there's 10 different referees. There are 10 different people, 10 different experiences. Yes, they're using the same laws, but they're using different judgment. And occasionally, a ruling is just not going to go your way. And all you can do is suck it, you know, and you just got to live with it and move on. But when so many bad decisions are going towards everyone,
Yeah.
At some point, you then have to look at the referees and go, right, okay, they're either not being trained well enough, they're not being coached well enough, or the laws aren't being written to give them the opportunity to actually use their heads and be and give them the bravery needed to go, right, okay, I don't think that's a yellow. And lastly, mic them. Because the best thing that happened with rugby was not VAR, it was miking the refs. Because now all of a sudden, everyone could understand why referees needed to be mic'd, because players can be utter pricks. And now that then you mic them and you go, excuse me, you're being recorded here. I'm in charge here. I'm the ref. If you want them to be arrogant, fine. But put the referee in a place of power, in a place of control, where he can go, right, this is why I'm making the decision. This is the evidence I've been given. This is what the law says. This is my interpretation. And then you go from there. And if anyone on the pitch calls him a cheat or abuses him, you called me a name, red, off.
And then That's actually a good... Something that I did want to discuss, because there has been a lot of talk on Twitter during the and after the match against Villa, how people notice that our players don't go and surround the referee, you know, and moan and ask for decisions to come in our way, which I usually really hate. As you know, you have that picture of Barcelona players and La Liga players, general, you know, surrounding the referee and just, you know, being there. And I really wouldn't want to see that. But sometimes
it works.
Go and do something. Yeah. Lift your hand. Go complain. I mean,
that's why they do it, though. Constant. You know, like it's why if people who are lone parents will know this. And people who are lone children will know this. You pick on someone. If a lone parent will usually have better kids than the parent with their family with two parents. Why? Because usually either the mother or the father lets them away with it. And the kid will always get disciplined by one, and the first thing they'll do is they'll run to the other one and whinge. And it's the same with referees, that you bitch and you bitch and you bitch, and eventually, if he's not a strong referee, he will give you something that you shouldn't get. And it's
but when's the last time you did that? I mean, I think the last time, not to rub in wounds, the last time I genuinely saw Arsenal players surrounding a ref like properly was when Van Persie was sent off against Barcelona.
Yeah,
literally. And I'm not rubbing in wounds here, but
but you're right.
I haven't seen.
It's true.
And I think
there's something perhaps in heads that players think that they will get punished if they go and complain and moan, because our players really get the cards really easily from all the referees.
Lacazette mentioned that when he first joined, because in France, it's you surround the ref and you really, I mean, they don't give a shit. You do it the same in Italy and in Spain. And he said that when he tried to do the same in England, he was easily booked.
Yeah.
And players would also get away with, you know, challenges on him, whilst in League One, that would be a booking. Yeah. If someone would get a leg break, that player who did the incident would get the same amount of games out as the player that was injured. We saw that, you know, with Zuma, when he went in on a rough challenge in League One, he was out for 16 games. Yeah. Whilst in the Premier League, you get a measly 3-game ban. And that's because, you know, he got a red card.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as just surround the ref, because there is a skill to it. Because Zaha gets fouled more often than any other player in the league, including Jack Grealish. He gets kicked from pillar to post. Yet he gets about half the fouls he should, because he gets up and he moans every time he doesn't get a free kick. So as a result, refs look at him and go, I'm not sure, he might be putting it on, I won't give him a free. Grealish, every time he gets kicked, he goes down like he was shot, and he screams. And as a result, he gets frees. Nakamba did the same for Villa. He got party booked, not because he was fouled, but because he screamed as if he'd been shot directly in the perineum. And he went down, and he a visceral roar out of him. And 5 minutes later, the referee still has that in his ear, going, oh my God, yeah, it must have been bad. And then you see the referee and his party getting the ball off him. Like, Vieira was brilliant at it. Vieira would, half the time, run with the ref as he's going up the field to join an attack, talking to him. And as soon as he blew the rut, yes, that's a foul. Yes, that's brutal. Ah, no, that must be. He was reffing the game with him. and building that rapport. And then when Arsenal didn't get a decision like a penalty, Vieira be in his face going, excuse me, you did this. Just coaxing him into making a decision, not demanding it, not screeching into his face, calling him this, that, and the other, but just gently nudging him towards it. And yes, you can intimidate refs and that, but Arsenal just, as their games have gone over the last 10 years, Arsenal don't intimidate anyone. And this is just...
They don't have it in their DNA. It's not, I mean, you can look, just, you know, mention someone like Chiellini. Referees genuinely are terrified of him because he has a such... Because 90% of the time he's covered in blood because he's went in into a duel and comes out bleeding on the other end. So he has half his head stitched up, and then... If I'm a referee and I have that one in my face, I'm like, here's your free kick. Just leave, you know, back the hell away. So the thing is, Arsenal players can't even dive properly, let alone surround the ref. It's like, really, dude, if you're going to dive, at least do it properly. Do you need to watch Neymar videos? But even now, like French referees, they've gotten used to Neymar's bullshit. So he doesn't get half the calls he would get when he first joined. That's why he's also injured a lot, because players really like kick the crap out of him. So we saw that at the weekend as well. So either if you surround the ref and you like try to get free kicks in your way, you either get them or you end up like, you know, Neymar, where you can get the shit kicked out of you, because while you try to do it one way, it now is backfiring on you. So I feel like Arsenal, whatever they do, they'll be the losers either way. And it's like, you thought that VAR coming in would help that. The issue is that you don't have capable referees reading the rules as they should. That's the thing. People read them as they think it should be. And that's a major concern going forward as well. So, you know, you need new referees, or you need to lay down the laws and be like, this is how you're going to read the game. This is how it's going to be. That you can't keep rewriting the rules as you go. You need to educate
these in the middle referees. Of the season.
Stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's insane. If they had done that in any other league, there would be blood. I mean... It's like, you know, when Napoli didn't show up to the Juve game, and Juve were on the pitch for 45 minutes and they got, you know, awarded the win. But we're in a fucking pandemic. You cannot award the win to Juve because Napoli was, you know, advised against traveling to Turin. So now that game is going to be replayed. So that I can understand, you know, those rules, but these are referees. They need to do better.
Do you think they'll help against Leeds on Sunday before we go?
Referees. Oh, yeah, that's definitely an interesting one. As you said, Leeds can show up and win 5-0, or we can do the same. I hope that Partey will play. I'll stick with my optimism and go with a win.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm never optimistic. I'm like, yeah, we're getting killed today. We're going to lose. It's like, you should have seen me before the Lyon PSG game. I was like, a wreck. I actually genuinely threw up just before kickoff, because I was like, so how many goals are we conceding today? Is Mbappe getting a hat trick? Is Neymar going to dive to get a penalty? Who's getting the red card? Oh, and I was like, which player is going to get injured? In the end, we were like, shit, Leo went off the game winning 1-0. And it was like, they were beautiful. So I'm trying to be more positive this season. It helps that we don't have any Europa games, which is going to be heartbreaking coming next week, because Lyon last season had just beaten Juve and was about to smack the living shitting out of City. So now... I only have Juve to watch, and to be honest, we fucking suck. So
Leeds 2-1.
I need a third team.
Yeah, but don't pick Arsenal. I Leeds are playing well. They're going to press really high. If Tierney comes back, I'd have a lot more confidence in Arsenal's ability to pin Leeds and fullbacks back. If he's not there and we've got Cedric and Bellerin trying to progress the ball up the field again, we might be in for a long Sunday afternoon.
I wonder who will start in attack, if Aubameyang will start.
He'll probably put Aubameyang on the left and Lacazette at nine.
Probably, yeah.
Just because he can't drop Saka, and he might drop Smith Rowe for Odegaard, just so that Smith Rowe can play against Benfica on Thursday.
And he definitely needs some rest.
And he needs rest.
Yeah.
So you might see I would play
Odegaard, because I thought he was brilliant when he came on.
He should have come on
way early. I think he should have started the game, because as you mentioned, Smith Rowe really needs the rest. You can see that he's getting slowly burned out. The signs are there. But I think because Arteta's like, before he was like, I don't have a backup. Now he has, and he's like, okay, we need to rest him. So
we're going
for a win.
who wins at a loss, which is usually how these things end when Stephen Bradley's on a podcast. Everyone says they're going to win and I say they're going to lose. Like, it's just, it's there's nothing else in me. Hopefully Matthew Wade will be over his heartbreak and, Mike Dean and him can return to bring us a more positive and uplifting Arsenal news. But thanks for staying with us for the last hour, listener. And thanks to Anita Sambal and Lana Dawood for joining me. Ladies, thanks very much. Greatly appreciated, as always.
It was great.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week, listener. Good luck.
Bye-bye.